step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino. With cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, and welcome back to We're Not So Different, a podcast about how we've always been idiots. My name is Luke. I am an amateurish historian, and as always, I am joined by Dr. Eleanor Yanega, who is anything but. Today, we're talking about abortion for probably obvious reasons. We'll come back to the stuff about cities later, but yeah.
We kind of got distracted by, you know, all the terrible policy.
But first, we do have a question from one of our patrons, Lita Rose, who asks, I have a question I've been wondering about. In college, I took medieval French literature classes, including one on women's writers. I was fascinated by the theme of Malmerie? I don't know. Women locked in towers, cuckolded husbands, etc., etc. Are these stories based on women's reality? Was actual tower locking happening, or was this just a French theme, or did it appear other places, basically?
Okay, so this is an interesting one because probably it wasn't actually happening, but it is kind of a theme that is picking up from classical themes as well, because you see this, for example, within classical mythology. You'll have people locking their wives up in towers and that sort of thing. For example, I think, who is it? The mother of one of the gods was, like, locked in a tower, but then Zeus saw her anyway and, like, boned down. That kind of a thing. So you have this as kind of like a repeating trope. So dudes so frightened of being cuckolded that they lock people in towers. It's also a theme in the Passion of Saint Barbara, who is one of the very popular virgin saints. And Saint Barbara, her deal was that, well, she doesn't get locked in a tower because someone is afraid of cuckolding her. She's one of these ones where her dad was a pagan and he wanted her to marry a pagan and she didn't want to marry a pagan because she loved Jesus so much. And so he, like, locked her in a tower, like, as a threat. And so you see, like, she's one of the easy to spot saints because she'll be holding her tower. So there is that. In turn, like, I mean, I can't say that no one ever got locked in a tower, but fundamentally what this kind of serves for as a kind of a stand-in for is just kind of saying that it is always kind of possible to simply lock women inside, especially if you're rich, if this is something that you feel like doing. Now, it is shown as being something that is bad, like you ought not to do it. But similarly, we see we see worry about this across like actual literature that talks about things. So, for example, we'll see literature that is kind of like talking about how to deal with your women relatives. And it's like, well, if you can't lock them in and you're worried that they're going to be cheating, a good thing to do is just, like, you know, cut all their hair off and ruin their nice clothes, and then they won't want to go out. So it's just, like, you know, like, just some light light abuse and that kind of thing. But you will see like people hand-wringing about this. But ultimately, it is a lot of the time possible for people to keep women indoors if they so choose, especially if they're rich. Now, if you're poor, probably not so much because somebody's got to help with the plowing. But if you're actually rich, you could just be like, well, you're not going anywhere, sweetheart. And like, that's the thing of it. But that's kind of taken to a logical extreme within Montmartre, where it's like, here's what kind of happens. And that's where we get kind of like the whole damsels in distress thing and, you know, knights riding to save people. But did it actually happen? No, but it doesn't have to happen because there are other ways to control women in the same way. But at the same time, it's just like the medieval version of a trope that you'll find all the time. But yeah, like the worries about cuckolding are extensive, and you know that also comes throughout literature within the period. So you know, you will see people just like stressing about this constantly, and stuff like, you know, like Tristan and Isolde, like the entire thing is about like Tristan cucking his uncle, like, which is interesting, you know, a choice, stuff like that. So, but it's interesting too, because like, you know, they fall in love while he's supposed to be transporting her to marry his uncle, and he's like transporting her like to make sure she doesn't cuck his uncle, and then he cucks his own, you know, stuff like that. It's like there's always this hand wringing about it, but the fact of the matter is people have options if they really want to fuck with women. So yeah, like it's just kind of like pointing out how screwed women are, sort of. Yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah, I was looking, and I think the god you were looking for was Perseus, who was confined to a tower.
Yeah.
And then, yep. But yeah, I think it's very interesting. It's a very fun, or a very interesting idea, you know. And you get all the Rapunzel stuff and everything like that, which comes about much later. But yeah, I mean, it's all, you know, kind of based on like Eleanor Stang stuff from the ancient, you know, ancient stories like that. So
makes it really medieval, right? It's just like this. It's the most medieval thing that you could possibly do, which is like, oh, well, here's a version of something from the classical past, but we're gonna also put like our weirdo things on top of it. Which is, well, actually, no, like the classical people are worried about getting cucked too. But, you know, medieval people just like to do the same thing. They're just doing fanfic the whole time, right? Yeah. It's like, this is just kind of like 50 Shades to Twilight, essentially.
You know? No, there's no reason to insult medieval people like that. They never like anything that bad.
No, they never do. They never do. You're right.
I'm just kidding. You people enjoy your,
do you know what? Like, enjoy
dollar store BDSM.
Go for it. Like, I mean, I kind of respect people who are into 50 Shades more than Twilight, but you know, whatever. Because did you know that 50 Shades is based on? That's why I brought it up. Yeah, it's like, okay, just making sure. Because I know that's not abundantly clear, being as one is written by a Mormon and the other one emphatically is not, but still, you know.
Yeah, I find the thing where fanfic gets turned into like real books very funny. There was a Kylo Ren and Rey from Star Wars one that got turned into a book.
No,
and the cover of the book looks exactly like them, like, you know, tall dark guy with like, you know, black clothes, and they're like scientists. I don't know. I saw it in a store, and I was like, holy shit! They
you immediately bought it.
Obviously. I did not, but my sister had. My sister did, and she thought it was very good as a connoisseur of whatever type of literature that happens to be. Anyway, fanfic. We've been doing it a long time.
We've been doing it, and you know, and that's another reason why, like, you know, you see this crop up repeatedly in Malmerie, is because people are like, oh, that's so good, I'm gonna do it too, right? Ooh, like, you know,
that's really hot, I want to get fucked in a tower in a tower on
totally. And like, it's quite funny too, because it also kind of, one of the things that's interesting about it in terms of how medieval literature works is, you know, like, one of the big things that we're constantly trying to do is like something new. Yeah. Right. Like our interest in terms of like literature and when everyone's an author is they want to be like genre breaking and they want to do something new and exciting. And like, that's mm-hmm. what they're really like down for. I mean, medieval people are like, I ain't even give a fuck about that. Right. But it works all kinds of ways too, you know, like, so for example, talking about Star Wars, you know, Star Wars follows like the archetypical hero's journey. And mm-hmm. like, you know, we continue to use the same mm-hmm. tropes over and over again, but you know, we just try to be like, oh, but now I've done a new thing with it and now mm-hmm. it's in space, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But medieval people don't care about that at all. They're like, well, you doing the tower thing? Hell yeah. You yeah. know, like they like that. That's like, that's fun
yep,
for them.
This story is good. Yeah. We don't yeah. Every story has already been told, you know.
Yeah.
So you can either tell it a new way or tell it an old way or just rip it off if you got enough money or, you know.
Totally.
You're not going to get sued.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there you go. Lita Rose, thank you.
Great question,
so
Lita.
Much for asking us this question. If you're the type of person who wants to ask us similar questions that we'll answer here, then you can subscribe at our Patreon at patreon.com/WNSDpod. We just put out our first episode on the Silmarillion. We're going to be recording one. We're going to be recording an episode on men's fashion tomorrow. That will go with the
Hell
episode
yeah.
on women's fashion we did last month. So yeah, subscribe, check that out. It's good. 20 episodes of bonus content for you to enjoy. But anyway, on to the show. So today's episode is about abortion, both as a current hot button political issue and also you know, how they were performed and viewed during the Middle Ages. We'll start with the present day discussion and then turn back the clock to look at the past a little later in the episode. So last Friday, June 24th, 2022, the Supreme Court of the United States basically overturned Roe versus Wade and held that abortion is a state's right issue, which means the states get to decide the extent to which it is legal or illegal and is no longer an individual right. In terms of immediate impact, this decision is very bad. To put it mildly, it reduces bodily autonomy across the board, will restrict or totally ban abortions in at least 30 American states, and will put millions in danger due to forced childbirth or trying to flee violent authorities to get abortions elsewhere. In broader materialist terms, it signals that the arch conservatives in America are in the ascendancy, at least for the time being. This is happening because of America's entrenched conservative constitutional order, which enshrines minoritarian rule, and any American opposition party is so co-opted by capital, it won't try to stop anything. Thus, the 50-year-long plan to overturn abortion has been realized, and it likely won't end there with civil rights rollbacks in America. Everything from same-sex marriage to birth control is currently under threat and liable to be thrown back as a state's rights issue. And just in case you're one of those people who say, oh, that's just America being stupid, well, it's also coming to Europe, too, if it hasn't already, you know, even though America is obviously being quite stupid. I won't lie, things don't look great. However, all is not lost, despite how awful the situation seems right now. For one, these measures are being implemented against the will of a populace that is openly hostile to the idea. Mm-hmm. The internet and mass media, despite their other issues, do put horrors like these in front of people's eyes regularly. And we know from extensive studies that seeing atrocities has a way of galvanizing people and getting them to change their ideas. It's very weird how people are seeing racism more and more in society mm-hmm. and things like that, because, you know, we have cameras that photograph police doing things like that. It's weird how the increased knowledge also, you know, has that side effect as well. You know, we just have to hope that Americans, you know, can actually be radicalized again, which is a another question entirely, but one not for this podcast right now. And, you know, one of the most important lessons in human history is that there is always, always power in numbers.
Yeah.
And there simply are far more of us than there are of them. And we should never forget that. But we can also use our shared human history as a source of hope in other ways, because we discover that things haven't always been like this, and these ideas are brought about not by some inborn callousness native to all humans, but by conservatives, reactionary political structures, and reactionary political structures that reinforce them on us daily. And that's what we will be talking about today. We'll spend a bit of time complaining about the current situation and talk about what can be done before turning to look back at the practice of medieval abortions and views on abortion in the Middle Ages. Eleanor.
Hello.
Hi. The over. Yeah, so they did the thing.
They did it. Yep.
Loving this theocracy.
I mean.
Loving it.
I am not surprised. I'm just disappointed, you know, like most people, I had a big cry about it. But I think the thing, to do, you know, as I was, you know, being very depressed and crying a lot after the 2019 elections, here in the UK, my partner said to me, we do not have the luxury of despair. And I think that is the thing to keep in mind right now, is that it's really, really easy to get bogged down in how bad things are, but we don't fucking have time for that. So and luckily, there, especially around things like this, there's lots of organizations, which we'll talk a lot in a bit, that already have things in place. Like, it's not necessarily incumbent upon you as an individual to figure out how this is going to get changed right now. There's already stuff in the works, right? And I think, like you said, Luke, the thing to sort of keep in mind is, like, no one wants this shit. And unfortunately, the American government is functioning in exactly the way that it was designed.
Perfectly as it was designed.
And the thing is, as I've said before, and we'll say again, it's a bad idea to let a bunch of genocidal slave owners start a country and to predicate every single thing you do subsequently in that country based on, oh, what would these genocidal slave owners want? I don't give a fuck what they want, homeboy. Mm-hmm. How about that? How about I really don't care what they think is smart or good. It's a stupid way to run a country, and it's stupid, and it's being done stupidly. But there's just way more of us than there are of them. And I think we are going to be doing one of the most important things, which is, you know, a lot of civil disobedience. Like, that's good and really important, because, boy, civil unrest really gets things done.
Civil unrest in Mexico after their Supreme Court made such a decision, got the decision overturned. I think would have to be some insane political unrest here in America for that to happen. But it's not an impossibility.
Yeah.
It's not something that can happen or something that hasn't happened. And I mean, there's also like the situation in Ireland,
So this is the thing. So there's good things that, like, there's sort of like the good and bad, right? Because it's very, you know, Ireland recently overturned their abortion laws after quite some time. But this is the thing. So, like, don't let fucking, for example, people in the UK talk down to you about this shit. Because while technically abortion just became illegal in Northern Ireland, you can't get one there. Like, you've got to get on a plane and go somewhere else. So it's like, you either need to, like, get over to the rest of the UK or down to the Republic, because, like, you can't have one there. Just because it's legal to have one doesn't mean it's possible. And, you know, stuff, it is legal here, but you have to get, like, doctor's recommendations and all this stuff, and it takes, like, way, way longer than it should. So, you know, this is something that's always kind of hinging in the balance everywhere. But at the same time, if you ask the majority of people say, oh, yeah, well, that's definitively something that needs to be taken care of. And the thing is that does actually matter. Because the only thing that gets politicians to do anything is, like, you know, when, you know, opinion polls are over a certain number. Because they're all callow bastards who don't really care about us. They just care about their jobs. How massively unpopular this is going to be is going to be a big, big deal.
It's like opinion polling is, especially opinion polling of Americans, is flawed,
yeah,
to say the least. But you know, like, I think there is this widespread idea that like America is a far more conservative country, like generally, than it actually is. Like America is, there's a lot of conservatism there, but like, the problem isn't that the people in America, that there are like 70% of people in America who are like, abortion should be illegal for everyone regardless, I don't care how many people die. The problem is that like, while 60-65% say abortion should be legal, so many of those people have been pushed outside of the democratic structures on purpose in order to constrict the voting base, so these parties don't actually have to give anyone anything, which is part of neoliberalism and the neoliberal order, you know, which we've talked about in the past. And you get these things like, you get these structures and they're so overwhelming and they're so oppressive and they push down on you, and it's like, you have all of these people, you have all these people who are like, you know, this isn't what I want, this isn't, you know, what I do. But like, the other issue in America is that we have no opposition party. We have Republicans who are conservatives, and we have Democrats who the leadership and basically every member of, regardless of how much you like them, is at the very best a centrist. At the very, very best. There are no, maybe Bernie, maybe a couple of other people, like quasi center left, not leftist, center left. There are no, there are very few, vanishingly few of those in America.
Yeah.
At the federal level. And so the Democratic Party is basically just completely co-opted. And as we talked about in the materialism series, they are not going to do anything to raise voter turnout, because that would raise expectations and make them think and make people think that they can actually do stuff. And Democrats right now do not want to do things. They do not, because it will mess up their fundraising. It gets people to think that they're actually worth more. And so they start asking for more money. And hey, I don't know if you realize, but the Fed basically just instituted a recession in America, and probably coming to the rest of the world soon, because wages were getting too high, or people, you know, supposedly getting too high. And like, this is all part of the structure that like bears down. So like, when you're thinking about America, you should be thinking about, okay, there's a bunch of people, and on most of these social issues, there is a wide agreement that they should exist. Birth control should be legal. Same-sex marriage has wide approval. Things like that. The problem is that all of the structures in America, including what is supposed to be our opposition party, is completely co-opted or completely in bed with the other party and doing whatever they want. And they have literally decided that it's fine for us to go back to being a theocracy rather than them losing their jobs. Because I guess, you know, holding on to power for another 4 years while you, I don't know, drain the spinal fluid out of children and suck it down or whatever that gets you to live longer. I'm not saying that actually happens. I'm just saying it is weird that all of these old people just live a really long time when that's not really how things work. But, you know, whatever.
I just feel like this is the thing, right? Is that the one part of the trouble that we have in America with this is that we don't have term limits and we don't have campaign finance reform. And so those are two issues that we have. And it's like, within this has been allowed to continue to be an issue. And this has been allowed to be something that hasn't been codified into law and can be taken away from us at any moment in order to fundraise. And that's how you get into this position. And also, you know, you get into this position because, again, you set up a country in a really stupid way. You let a bunch of dudes who wear wigs and pantaloons set up a country. And then you have something called the Supreme Court, which is like so wildly evil, like as an idea that, like, you know, if someone was writing like a bad fantasy fiction and they're like, oh, and then there's the nine and then they get to be on the court forever, you'd be like, that's a little on the nose, right? And yet we have that.
One thing you should know is that the court will not save America. Like, people want to talk about, like, expanding the court and doing all this and, like, okay, yeah, whatever. But the problem is the court itself, because the court is an inherently reactionary institution. For instance, last week, Sonia Sotomayor, who is a justice appointed by Obama and probably the, like,
most
only one who's not, I mean, like, she's not great, but, like,
she's as good as it gets, I would say.
Yeah. And, you know, last week she was like, Clarence Thomas is a great guy. Like, he loves people, blah, blah, blah.
I don't give
like,
a fuck. And, like, these people. He loves raping people, allegedly.
These people are, like, they are in the club. And they are going to protect the club from everything else. It does not matter what you think about, like, Sonia Sotomayor or RBG or whatever. No. Like, RBG was best friends with Scalia, who was, like, going out of his way to make abortion and every other and all kinds of insane shit legal.
Yeah.
And or illegal, depending. And, like, they're like, yeah, well, they're friends. We go to the opera together. Like,
I don't.
Like, no, those people are not going to save you. Nobody that would be appointed. Like, I mean, I can't think of a Democrat who's like appointments on something like that. I would be like, OK, yeah, cool. Like, even in terms of like, yeah, they're decent. Like, they're just not good. They're, like, the entire structure there is done. And it's something where it has to be like, it's going to have to be the people like either like moving into the power of like the Democratic Party through whatever means that happens and then using those mechanisms, because if you can get there, you can do what you want because the mechanisms of power are there within the within like that party apparatus in America, even though American parties are fucking weird. But like if you can get in there, and I'm not saying reform the Democrats, they are an unreformable fucking mess. I'm saying you have to like It has to be top down, but I'm saying like if you can do that, it is it is very possible to use these structures differently. Now, if I was doing it, I would say that you need to have a whole new constitution, and you know maybe we need to redefine like what exactly the nation is and everything. Yeah. But they don't ask me those things.
Like no one asks us shit. You know, like so.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The thing of it is, what we need to focus on, because, you know, saying things like, oh, we can reform the court, and oh, like, maybe the Democrats will da-da-da-da-da. Like, that's all well and good. But there's actual work that needs to be done right now, and it's not theoretical. And that's why, you know, again, one of the best things that you can do right now, and one of the best things kind of, like, for your soul at the moment is to kind of like get involved in, you know, mutual aid groups and things like that. But also there's a bunch of really great groups that you can get involved with or give money to, which, I've done a list of, in which, we'll try to throw some stuff in the show notes about this too. But, so I think like what some of the ones that I want to shout out, first of all, are some of the ones that are for the South and Southeast where things are going to get messy right away. So ARC Southeast is a good one, which is the Access Reproductive Care Southeast. And they do support for people in like Alabama, Florida, Georgia, Mississippi, South Carolina, and Tennessee. And so basically they do funding and transport for people who need abortion access. And they also do stuff like childcare organization and translation services. So they're a really, really great one. And I think that that's a good one if you are kind of local to the South. Fund Texas Choice is obviously a Texan one. And they will do travel costs in order to, if you need to get in or get out of the state. Yellowhammer Fund is specific to Alabama and Mississippi. So that's a good one to look at. Again, transportation, lodging costs. They will also hook you up if you need like emergency contraceptive access and like sex ed materials and stuff. So they're pretty cool. They're pretty cool. There's a bunch in Florida. So like the ones that I know about are the Florida Access Network. There's the Tampa Bay Abortion Fund. There are Broward Women's Emergency Fund, but there's also one place where you can make a donation and it'll spread it out to, like, there's six big orgs in Florida and it'll do that. There's the New Orleans Abortion Fund, does what it says on the tin. And then there's a special Appalachian one, which is Holler Health Justice, H-O-L-L-E-R, Health Justice, and it's very good. Up in my neck of the woods, shout out PN Dub, it's probably going to be less of a problem in Washington and Oregon, but our friends in Idaho and Alaska are maybe going to have some issues. So there's a good one, the Northwest Abortion Access Fund, or NWAAF, and they will help out our friends in Idaho and Alaska. And they'll also help you out if you just need some help in Washington and Oregon. Access Reproductive Justice does California. And then there's also, very importantly, the Utah Abortion Fund, because, homie, those Mormons about to go hard. So Utah Abortion Fund, a very, very good one to think about. So they do, like, practical support and, like, financial support for people in Utah. And so, like, that's a good one to go to, for sure. There's a DC Abortion Fund. Which does what it says on the tin, but they also support people in Maryland and Virginia. There is also the Haven Coalition, so people who are traveling to New York to get care, they're specific, like, if you're coming into New York, they'll help you out with that. And then there's the Abortion Liberation Fund in Pennsylvania, and they are cool because they're like just helping people out who have, like, low income. So, like, if you just need some money and support, they'll hook you up. For Central and Northwest, there's the Kentucky Health Justice Network, does what you would think, as well as the Midwest Access Coalition. And they, Midwest Access Coalition, are based in Chicago, but they also will help out for, like, travel costs, lodging, food, medicine, anything like that around in the Midwest. And you can volunteer with them as well, which is cool. So that's good. There's also the Arkansas Abortion Support Network, or AASN. And they will do, like, clinic escorts. They do funding stuff. They do educational outreach, all sorts of good things. Similarly, the Missouri Abortion Fund are very good for that. I also want to shout out nationwide the Bridget Alliance. And the Bridget Alliance help people to travel and get places where they need, and they're really established and very, very good. There's also just generally, you can check out the National Network of Abortion Funds. And what you can do there is you can do kind of like one donation and it'll go to various orgs. So that's a good one as well. And you can find them on abortionfunds.org. So that's a lot. But, you know, we'll stick it in. We'll stick some links in the show notes and that sort of thing. But, I mean, my point is here, like, this is really not the time to give up. You know, to quote Limmy, don't back down, double down. Like, we need to go at this harder than we otherwise would have done. And when, you know, so for example, you know, when the Democrats see that, oh, money's going a lot of other places other than them, they might be like, oh, huh. When you show up to every protest and make a life hell for these people, they'll start thinking. You know, we need to think about the groups that are already in place. And what we need now is solidarity. I don't want to see any of this nonsense when people are talking about like, oh, well, this isn't really going to affect rich women. Shut up. That's not what solidarity is. We need to just like support everyone who is like going to who is going through it right now. And the thing that we need to do is like close ranks on this and just start volunteering and giving what we can, because that's where it's at right now.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Class consciousness is not the idea that this thing won't affect the rich.
No.
You know, the problem in this instance is the reactionary institutions and the methods that they are taking in. Every person who can get pregnant, regardless of financial status, will be affected by this in some way. Now, that does, of course, does not mean that wealthy people will not have more options to get out of this, because of course they will. But
it's still,
you shouldn't visit a horror on someone just because, you know, like, I mean, you know, obviously, you know, the rich should pay for their crimes. But obviously, like with things like this, like, you know,
it's just not helpful. Right. Because like the thing that's happened here is that everyone with a uterus has just been told that, you know, once again, that we're second class, as though we didn't already know that people thought that, you know. And we don't do terrible things to people just because they have money. And we don't need to further divide ourselves. We need everyone in on this. So like that's what solidarity is. Solidarity doesn't mean that you necessarily like somebody. Solidarity means that you understand that like your fates are bound up and that something is right or wrong. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Like and that's just what it is, you know?
Yeah, and it's more important to address, in this instance, it's more important to address the idea of the reactionary forces that allow this to happen instead of being like, well, this won't affect rich people, because, you know, class war is good, but, you know.
But forcing, like, forcing
anyone into childbirth is, you know, bad.
Yep.
Anyone who does that, regardless of like where, you know, you are adopting the reactionary thing, and you're adopting the reactionary framework in order to apply it to people that you don't like. And I completely understand not liking really rich people who fucking suck and flaunt it all the time. That does suck. Those people absolutely fucking suck. However, the problem in this instance is abortion, reactionary institutions, things like that. Now, I mean, if there are also assholes for other reasons, you know, well, you know, fuck them. But that, you know, forced childbirth is bad regardless of how much money you're born into the world with.
Yeah.
In my opinion, in my humble opinion.
Exactly. And like, that's just like, there's just no time for this right now, comrades. Like, there's no time for like trying to like block off solidarity to certain people. So just like, get in here, do what we can, help out. Mm-hmm. That's what's up. That's what's
the
up.
The same thing. I will say the same thing, you know, was saying this is solely a women's rights issue. That is false, in my opinion, because there are people who aren't women who can have children, who can give birth, and people should, anyone, it doesn't matter, should not be forced into childbirth. So like, and if you want to be like, well, you're a white man, you could say that shit. Like, fine, you're right. I am. Like, I am. And I am privileged in that regard. I am a cis white man, and I've never claimed anything other than that. But I don't think it's helpful to throw trans people or gender non-binary people to the wolves, because it's not like throwing them to the wolves is going to sate the wolves, because they're still coming.
That's how we got into this mess. That's how we got into this mess. It's like, you know, all these TERFs running around here on TERF Island talking about how, like, the thing that is what defines a woman is her reproductive capacity. That's how we got here.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So fuck you. Yep. No.
Yeah.
Like, it's yeah. like, well, the thing that I will say about abortion and, like, that whole frame of thought is it is a women's issue, but it's also other people's issue, too.
Yes. Yes. That, yes, that is. I'm sorry. Yes. That's a much better way to say it than how I said it. But regardless. Mm. Yeah. It's an issue for everyone.
Yeah.
It's an issue for me because I don't think people should be forced to give birth.
Yeah, it's about bodily autonomy, like it just yeah. generally, you know. And so
even if you don't care about bodily autonomy, people will die because of this, because childbirth is an inherently dangerous thing,
y'all.
Especially in a country that does not have universal mm-hmm. health care mm-hmm. or you know, universalized medicine or whatever you want to fucking call it.
We're out here in America charging people to like touch their baby after they give birth.
Yes.
Like, don't give me this shit about like, I'm so angry. Sorry.
This shit sucks. All the places we mentioned earlier are also available on a website that Eleanor mentioned, abortionfunds.org. They have lists by state, by national, and I think a couple of international as well. One in Mexico City, one in London, I believe. So give them money.
Yeah.
Donate. Help out. Do whatever you can and whatever you feel safe doing.
That's right.
You know, helping people, whatever you want to read into helping people, you know.
Do it.
Whatever you feel safe with. Money, support, joining orgs.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep. Whatever you can do. You know, we've all got limits, but
yep.
Let's do it, you know.
Exactly. Yeah, so we've talked about that, and that was insanely frustrating to talk about. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, managed to make it out without stepping on too many of the landmines. I only triggered like 7 of them on the way out.
You did good.
you know, so now we're going to talk about abortion in the Middle Ages.
Correct.
And this is one of the cases in which we are very different and mm-hmm. things were better back then, at least in regards to how it was viewed.
Yeah,
to be clear, yeah. childbirth much, much, much worse back then. Very, you know, still
oh, yeah,
dangerous,
totally,
obviously.
Totally,
but
yeah.
But the views, yeah. So, Eleanor, I think we've talked, you know, we've kind of mentioned it a few places before, and there's a lot of like, oh, well, you know, back in the day, this was completely legal and blah, blah, yeah. blah. So, like, abortion in the Middle Ages. How did people view it back then?
You know, this is one of these things because there's a lot of back and forth and to and fro about it, right? Mm. Because fundamentally, a lot of the times when we do see, for example, prescriptions against abortion, like, a lot of the time, it's not necessarily because people are worried about what's going on with the fetus. A lot of the time, they're worried about what's going on for the woman. So this is really interesting because, for example, the Hippocratic Oath, if we're going right back, it says that you shouldn't do abortifacients because it can put the mother's life in danger. Not like the fetus's life. And then, you know, people kind of like will write in the ancient period about this. And like, you know, we've got like a 2nd century gynecological test by Serenus of Ephesus. And it's like, oh, yeah, well, here's some recipes for abortifacients and stuff like that. And you're going to need these, you know, because if you're doing some adultery or if you're trying to keep yourself a youthful beauty. And then he's like, there you go. Like go for it, right?
Youthful beauty.
Uh-huh. Okay. And like the first big pharmaceutical text that we have, which is kind of by, it's called by a guy called Pedanius Discordatus, and it's called Materia Medica, and it lists 959 substances, and in those 959 substances, 141 of them can bring on menstruation, and 49 of them can expel an embryo. And 18 of them, he's like, these cause abortion. So the ancient people, they've got, they're sort of like, I don't know, here's these different ways of looking at it. Roman mm-hmm. law would forbid you from giving a love potion, but in the same way that it says that you shouldn't be doing an abortifacient. And it's for the same reasons as the Hippocratic Oath. But like, you shouldn't do it. You could poison people, right? Because like all these abortifacients, yeah. if you take too much of them, it poisons people. But yeah. Then
I'm sorry, I'm not laughing at the subject. I'm laughing at the idea of a law about love potions. Yeah. I completely understand why. I know all the. It's just funny to me. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, but it, like, but that's totally like the thing about a lot of this, right? Is that, you know, just like when we're talking in the magic section, there's a lot of different ways of thinking about magic. There's a lot of different ways of thinking about abortion, and it's like seeing it on the same level as love potions is like a thing, right?
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
So, like, all of this is to say that people are like definitely having abortions from way back, and how people see it really changes over the period as well. Okay, so like pretty early on, for example, the Church Council of Ankara in 314 says that, like, if you do an abortion to yourself or you do it for other people, you're supposed to be exiled from the church for 10 years.
Hmm. Okay.
But before that, you were supposed to be exiled for life. But then in like the mid 4th century, Basil the Great, who's one of the church fathers, he says that, like, basically that doesn't really matter. It's like, it just like, is this person repentant? Well, then like, this should, like, we need to take that into. And again, he doesn't just talk about like what's happening to the fetus. He talks about how it's a dangerous procedure for women and that women, you quote, usually die from such attempts. So it's like, this is, you need to think about it as like the same way that you would sort of think about like almost a suicide attempt. Like that's the worry about it. And then within this, like, basically you need to also understand that there is a huge back and forth about when or not the fetus is what they call ensouled. And this connects directly to this idea of the quickening. And the quickening is when you, as a pregnant person, first feel fetal movement. And if you don't feel fetal movement, it's kind of like, well, you know, like there's a lot of room to maneuver within that, right? So over and over and over again, that is what discussions will kind of like hinge on, right? It's like, well, what time are we talking about? Like, could you reasonably know that, you know, you're pregnant? Did you reasonably try to get in there before, like, this guy's moving around? Like, what's going on with this? And then even within that, like, there's massive views, because some people say, like, across the board, that this is taking a life. Like, certain people within the Catholic Church are like, oh yeah, well, that's definitely, this is kind of like taking a life, and that's what you're doing, right? But it's often then put in sort of comparison to then, like, the woman's life, right? Because there's a lot of understanding that, like, well, yeah, women just fucking die in childbirth all the time. And there's a real understanding also that things could be like, there's just a situation in which, like, it's not going to go well for the women, right? So medical practitioners, for example, they are like, well, there could be like pelvic malformations, like if you're too young or you're too old. You know, if there's something going on that it's like, ugh, this is probably likely to be a premature fetus, or something has already happened where they're like, this does not seem to be going well. Kind of like across the board, it's been like, yeah, all right, it's time to knock this off, right? And in the 4th century, the medical writer Theodorus Priscinius says that in these cases, abortion is like pruning the branches of a tree that, like, need to go in order to produce better fruit, or ejecting the cargo of a boat during a storm, right? So if you are in a storm and you're too heavy and you're taking on water, you just got to get rid of that shit. And that's a really, really common way of thinking about it, right? And like, basically these things also can include sometimes like what we would call now, stupid, well, like, it's a bad term and I don't like it, partial birth abortion, right? Because partial birth abortion is one of those that where no one is doing that for fun, right? Like makes it seem way more like this is a decision that people are making because they're like, ah, fuck it. Like, partial birth abortions pretty much across the board happen because someone's about to die, Right.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got a 10th century life of the patriarch Ignatos. And like in it, he kind of like talks about, he's a religious guy, right? And he's talking about a situation where a woman in labor is experiencing a breech birth and that she's in terrible pain. And that like, basically people are aware of the fact that she is going to die. Like this kid is just going to kill her. There's no way to get it out. So instead, the doctors kind of go in and they dismember the fetus and take it out that way. And the doctors are like, okay, this is what is going to need to happen in order for this baby to come out. We know about this, however, because instead there's a miracle. And like someone brings in a relic, and like the relic cures the thing and the baby is able to come out. But the point is the patriarch Ignatios was like, yeah, and this is what would need to happen. But it's like, this is a story about a miracle, right? It's a story about how it's a miracle that didn't need to happen. But this is a big fucking religious homeboy in the 10th century. And he's like, yeah, obviously you need to save the woman, right? And then there's also kind of like gray areas as well, because so John Chrysostom, who's like a very important church thinker, he writes about how sex workers can have abortions. And he says, because even if the daring deed is hers, causing it is thine, which is like he blames the men who knock up sex workers for the fact that sex workers have to have abortions. So he's like, if a sex worker has an abortion, sure, it might be a sin. But you know who did the sin? The dude. The dude who knocked her up. So, like, she's totally in the clear, right? So you will also see, like, a lot of things go back and forth about abortions. And, like, so sometimes, for example, there'll be laws on the records being like, yo, like, abortion is bad. But actually what you're looking at there is people who do violence against women in order to get them to abort, or who, like, they're, like... like basically abortions against their wills.
Feticide.
Yeah, feticide. Or, yeah, where it's like,
yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah. I think that's what it's called.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And like, so for example, like Visigothic law, like if we go up, like right back to before, like right when we have the kind of like post-Roman period. So they've got laws about abortion that are based on what they call formed and unformed fetuses, right? So that basically like, if it, and this is like both for voluntary and involuntary abortion, right? So basically, involuntary abortion as a result of violence, that's like really, really a serious injury that you've caused to the mother, right? And it, like, intentional abortion is also sometimes punished pretty severely, but specifically after the fetus is unformed. So like, basically giving poisonous substances to people here, though, again, this is one of the things where it's like, it's maybe attempted murder on the mother, even if she asked for it. So like, it's one of these things where it's not necessarily about the fetus unless the mother wants to have the baby, and then it is, but even then it's like, it's not really necessarily about, it's like you've done something wrong to the fetus, you've done something wrong to the mother. Like, she wanted to have that baby and you fucked her over, right? Now, having said all this, this can kind of like go back and forth within, like, you know, laws depending on who's in power, right? Like, so there is a particular theologian, Peter of Spain, who lived in the 13th century, and we think he became Pope John the 21st. It's one of those ones where sometimes, you know, our records are not great. And he wrote this really cool book called The Thesaurum Pauperum, or Treasures of the Poor. And it's a great medical guide on like various methods from like classical Arabic and contemporary medicine. And it is specifically like, here's some things that poor people can use because they don't have access to medicine. And a big fucking thing that he goes through is contraceptive techniques. And he goes through like abort-efficient techniques as well. And this is interesting because, like, if this guy is like an important religious thinker, might have even become Pope And he's like, yeah, here you go. Here's how you do it. Because, like, this really screws over poor people and they need to do that. But on the other hand, it might have been also something that was going on because at that point in time, child abandonment was becoming a problem for the church. Because if someone has a baby and they can't afford it, you can always be like, bloop, and, like, leave it with a monastery, right? Like, that's how... That's one way of doing things. And they're like, ah, brah, like, we got a lot of babies, like, on our doorsteps anymore, and we don't necessarily want to be doing this. So here's, like, how you get around unwanted pregnancies, right? But then, even again with this, thinking about abortion a lot of the time, especially if it's abortion before the quickening, one of the things that we see over and over again is people use that on the one hand versus child abandonment or infanticide on the other one. Because actually, infanticide at differing periods in the medieval period is distressingly high. Right? Where it's like women who don't have another option, and it's like, well, we'll all die. What happens is babies end up getting killed. And so basically that is... people are saying, okay, on a sliding scale of you're having an abortion kind of earlier on versus a baby, like an actual baby that was born is getting killed, we're going for the abortion every time now. Having said that, like, there are nutters as well, right? So there's as many people as, like, we see are like, yeah, well, there's ways of getting it. There's also people who are like, no, that, like, this is bad. So, for example, the English theologian Thomas Cobham, who's working in kind of like the 12th and 13th century, is like, anything, any abortive acts at all are like, even if it's like, basically, like, you're doing pull and pray. Like, that is that is bad. And that includes, like, having sex with pregnant women. He's like, well, you are doing an abortion in a way because you know she can't get pregnant again. And so, like, you're doing this for contraceptive reasons, and you really, really shouldn't do that, right? Rufinus, who's the bishop of Assisi in the 12th century, he says that any abortive acts are homicides, right? But having said that, he's like, well, but if you come forward and you, like, confess that you've done it, then, well, we'll, like, then you can have penance, right? And you're not necessarily going to get punished for that. Some people, like, there's an English cardinal, Robert Polis, in the, like, 12th century, and he's like, well, you should look at what Exodus has to say on this. And his thing is like, well, the level of punishment that someone gets for an abortion should be linked to, like, what the unborn child's father was kind of saying, right? And so he's saying that, like, basically, like, if there's been an abortion, but it's like there was violent means, or, like, the father was really putting pressure on a woman or whatever, then that kind of, like, negates it, right? So, you know, like, but then I would say that on the whole, the most common thing is, like, what we will see from, like, the theologian Peter Cantor, who died in 1197. And he's like, it's about fetal animation. It's about the quickening. And basically it's like, there are different ways to look at this. There are different ways that we should kind of, like, think about punishing people, but it really depends on if the abortion is animated, what's going on for the mother, and, like, what would kind of happen here in theory. And that, so that's all to say that people think it's complex. There's no, like, one way thing. You don't go around in the medieval period, even in the medieval period, just being like, oh, blanket statement. This is how you can think about abortion. Blanket statement. This is how you can think about the people who did it. It's basically like, you need to think about the varying matters at play. How far along is the woman? What are all these things doing? And also, like, what the harm to the individual is going to be. There's nothing as fucking stupid as what is going on in America right now, which is why it's driving me crazy when you keep seeing people calling this, like, ruling medieval. It is not. Medieval people were a lot smarter than this, and they were a lot more sensitive to the issues, and they had a whole lot of ways of thinking about it. Because even having said all of this, having said this, it's like, well, yeah, sometimes there's laws on the books, like, you know, in Visigothic law, being like, oh, well, that's illegal. Sometimes it's like, no, these things are fine. And sometimes, like, you know, the church will say, oh, well, you shouldn't do this. And, like, this is some kind of real problem, right? Mm-hmm. But having said that, we don't even think that, like, people really, like, care all that much, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, the most common laws that we find kind of in the early medieval period, the law of the Salian Frank, they are like, well, poisoning is bad and you should get in trouble for poisoning people, but I don't really care if it's like linked to abortion, right? And the great majority of medical care that's happening at the time is happening in people's own homes. Right. So no one give a fuck what the, like, you know, I'm constantly talking about this. Like, I'll constantly tell you guys what the medieval church thinks about things. And then they will sit around wringing their hands and they will think this to death and they will write a million different think pieces about it. Cool, cool, cool. You don't think that anyone should have sex during, like, you know, fucking Advent? How many kids get born in September? Oh, you don't think that people should have sex while they're pregnant? Guess what? I doubt that fucking happened, right? Oh, you don't think that people should ever have sex on a Saturday? Guess what? People do it anyway. No one really cares. What, like, and maybe they'll feel guilty about it. Maybe they'll confess it. Maybe they'll do all these different things. But fundamentally, we don't know what the majority of people are doing because they are, on the whole, taking healthcare into their own hands. And sometimes because popes are writing fucking books being like, here you go. Here's how to have an abortion. Here you go, do it. Right? Hildegard of fucking Bingen has multiple recipes for how to, like, make abortion efficient. She's a saint. She's a saint. All right? Like, this is how much, like, it doesn't necessarily, like, the church has a lot of different thinkings on the matter. There's no one thing, and we don't really know how people kind of feel about it in their regular life. So don't ever let anyone say during this whole thing that, like, oh, we're being medieval. We're not being medieval. We're being stupider than medieval period people. And, it drives me crazy.
Yeah, we're being Victorian.
Yeah, we're being, yeah, I mean, you can say that, yeah, you know.
When... Yeah, so before we go, I guess, like, when did this opinion begin to shift? I'm assuming that was probably it was probably later.
Kind of start to see it shift more definitively in the modern period. In the early modern period, it's still really kind of the same, where it's like penny royal, you know, like really, really quickly. And, like, it starts kind of being brought more definitively into place kind of post, again, Reformation. Because in the Reformation, everyone's having the holier than thou off. So, you know, medieval, you know, Christians, there, you don't need to prove anything because everybody's the same flavor of Christian. Protestants and Catholics, they start getting much more serious about these things. And so things kind of start to form up. And it also starts to be kind of like a linked up in sort of like Enlightenment and post-Enlightenment philosophy, because there's all this kind of like people are just like wanking on about the soul and being scientific and things like this. And there's also kind of like a horror of what medicine might be able to do. Right? Now, having said that, in the early modern period, you know, one of the things that we see during like the witch persecutions and like the witch panics of the sort of 17th century and things like that, it's often linked to abortion. So that's like, abortion is bad and you're using magic to do it. It starts to move into the Enlightenment period and like, oh, abortion is bad and you're using kind of medicine to do it. And so we start to see these things kind of firm up, especially when we see the kind of post-Enlightenment view of women and the movement of women outside, like in outside roles and more involved in society, and like those that being kind of like walked back, which is what you see, especially for middle-class women and rich women in the modern period. So as women are increasingly seen as only having a place within the domestic sphere, which is kind of like an Enlightenment and post-Enlightenment thing, when they retreat from the regular world, it's like, oh, well, you should just be having babies. Shouldn't you be having babies? Babies, babies, babies. That's what ladies is for making babies. This never really applies to working class women in the same way, because working class women have always worked. But there is a lot of suspicion about what the poor get up to, right? And it's like, oh, those damn poors don't know how to, like, stop having kids or whatever the fuck, right? So this also then really takes off, especially in America during the Great Revival, which has a lot to fucking answer for. So the Great Revival, where everyone is suddenly getting baptized in a tent or a stream, and there is like this great outpouring of religious sentiment. It's also really tied to having more particularized thoughts on things like abortion. So anytime you see like a big religious movement, so the Reformation, the Great Revival, things like that, that's when you'll see these things get ratcheted up and kind of like amped up. So these sentiments about abortion are really specifically kind of linked to those moments. When it was just kind of like women in their kitchens making a Hildegard of Bingen recipe where they're like, you know, basically they're taking barberry, yarrow, astrologica, and yew, crushing it in a mortar, cooking it in wine, adding clove and white pepper, and then taking that. That's a lot more like, oh, hey, well, But when it's like, oh, you're going to a doctor or you're going to a guy, and it's like that, there's this kind of like worry about the other being involved and the intentions of the other. And then that's when things get really tricky and sticky. So it's not a medieval thing. It's a modern thing, and it's also linked to our own weird ideas of religion. Medieval people actually a lot of the time have more nuanced opinions of religion because they're living in a more... they're living in a more religious society, but it's less theocratic, ironically. And there is less ability for surveillance of the individual in the medieval period. The modern period allows all of these ways of kind of spying on people, and it has more things like police networks, right? Like, it's a lot harder to police people's bodies when you don't have police, right?
Yeah.
Like, someone has to report that something has happened, you know, to someone in order for the law to be involved. And it's really hard for that to happen in the medieval period because there just isn't that kind of apparatus either from the state or from the church. And we now have that. And that's why you can get into all these problems. Yeah.
Makes sense. Well, that was a suitably depressing episode, but one we felt we needed to do regardless. Yeah. Again, please donate your time, money, effort, solidarity, whatever you can to help out. And we'll post links to this stuff in the show notes. That's all we've got for today. Yeah. Eleanor, where can people find
you? Yeah, check me out. I'm being depressed on at Going Medieval on Twitter, on the blog at going-medieval.com. And there's always my comic book, The Middle Ages, The Graphic History, if you haven't got it yet. But it'd be nice if you would. That'd really help me out. Yeah.
And my name is Luke. You can find me at Luke is Amazing on Twitter, or you can find my other podcast, A People's History of the Old Republic, wherever you're listening to this. Again, thank you everyone so much for listening, and we will see you next time.
Bye.